get started on our next topic. We have an overview of the primary financial statement project. Michelle is going to update us on the discussions she's had with the board since you and the GPF last met in mid-June.
I'm going to talk through the slides in agenda page 3. I'll start with just a quick overview of what the project scope is as a reminder, and a reminder of the topics we spoke about last time. And then I'll go on to give an update of the board discussion since the CMAT GPF meeting when we last discussed the project. This update is intended to provide background information only, and it's intended to lead into our discussion on financial institutions. So I'm going to keep the update quite brief. So slide 4 shows the scope of the project. Now, based on our research and outreach, the board has tentatively decided that the project should focus on targeted improvements to the statement of financial performance and the statement of cash flows. For the statement of financial performance, we're exploring requiring additional standardised subtotals that investors are told that would be useful to their analysis, for example, EBIT. And also, in order to have comparable subtotals, we'll need to consider removing some of the presentation options that are currently in IFRS standards. We also expect to explore guidance on commonly used performance measures, including on the presentation of non-recurring items to help transparency for investors. And we're also looking at other ways of improving presentation of OCI. Now, our primary focus is the statement of financial performance. We're also expecting to explore some targeted improvements to the statement of cash flows to eliminate some diversity in practice and for consistency with the statement of financial performance. The board's decided not to look at the other statements, so look at the balance sheet as part of this project, unless the work that we do on this project identifies concerns that we need to look at as part of the project. However, the board planned to consider the development of overall principles, the disaggregating items, and also on the development of illustrative templates. So those discussions have the potential to impact all the primary financial statements. So moving on to slide 5, which shows the board's discussions to date. The board's main discussion so far this year have been about introducing additional subtotals, so an EBIT and a management performance measure. Now, we sought the views of CMAT members on the staff proposals for these subtotals at the last CMAT GPF meeting. The board has also started, since that meeting, starting discussing ways of improving disaggregation of information. And I'll update you on the board's discussions at the end of this update. Slide 7 shows the proposal that we brought to the CMAT GPF meeting. It shows we discussed the combination of two subtotals, the EBIT subtotal, together with the management performance measure, shown on the slide 7. This combination is intended to address the tension between providing investors with comparable information and still providing flexibility to preparers to report their view of performance. Now, slide 8 shows the staff proposals on the EBIT side. Many companies already present an EBIT, or more commonly an EBIT-type operating profit, calculated as profit before financing and tax. Now, we haven't seen much diversity in how the tax component's calculated, but we've observed different companies classifying items differently in finance income and expense. For example, the common example is net interest on a net defined benefit liability. And therefore, if we plan to bring in a comparable EBIT subtotal, we'll need to define finance income and expense, or define the I in EBIT, to ensure that EBIT is calculated consistently by companies. Now, at our last, at the CMAT GPF meeting, the staff proposed defining finance income and expense in relation to capital structure, as well as including interest on other items, as shown on the slide 8. And we also proposed a definition of capital structure, which is also shown on slide 8. And our discussions so far have only looked at non-financial companies. Slide 9 shows the feedback that we received from CMAP and GPF members on our proposals, and we felt it was quite positive. Most members seemed to support us developing proposals for EBIT and management performance measure, and they also supported our principles-based approach to determining finance income and expense and capital structure. However, we had some feedback that some members felt cash and cash equivalents was too restrictive as a proxy for temporary cash and temporary investments of excess cash that form part of capital structure. We also heard mixed views among members about what type of items should be within capital structure. For example, whether or not things like decommissioning liabilities and net defined benefit liabilities should be in capital structure. Now, in slide 11 moves on to show the staff's slightly revised proposals that we brought to the board in September, so after our last discussions with CMAC. We presented the proposal shown on slide 11. The main difference between our proposals in June was the introduction of an investing category in the Statement of Financial Performance to add further structure and transparency. Now, the staff proposal for this was to include assets that yield a return and do not result in significant synergies for the entity in combination with other resources, to try and capture income on assets that we've heard that investors measure separately from an entity's operations. But this definition of investing is very much a working definition at the moment. Now, if we include this category, we could therefore have two subtotals, a profit before financing, investing, and income tax, and a profit before financing and income tax. Slide 12 shows how we slightly changed our proposals on how to define finance income and expense. So now we're defining it slightly more narrowly than we proposed in June. So rather than including all interest income on assets outside capital structure, we're proposing to include only interest income on a net defined benefit asset or a net asset when a liability qualifies for offset. So in other words, on the asset side, we're just trying to capture interest on liabilities in a surplus funding situation. This is because if we bring in an investing category, the staff think that this might be the best home for income on assets outside capital structure that are investing in nature. So at the last board meeting, most of our discussions were around how to introduce the investing category, and we didn't rediscuss the definition of capital structure. So we planned to bring the discussion on capital structure together with the investing category back to the next board meeting. So our proposals are still very much a work in progress. Slide 13 shows a summary of the board's discussions. At the last board meeting, the board tentatively decided to prioritise its work on introducing the EBIT subtotal over looking at the management performance measure. However, once the board has made some headway on discussing the EBIT subtotal, we'll bring our proposals for the management performance measure back. The board didn't take any decisions on the staff proposal for the investing category, but is generally supportive of exploring that category further. The board has directed the staff to work on the areas shown on slide 13 for the next board meeting. So that's a brief update of the discussions on EBIT for a straightforward non-financial company. We think the board's made good progress on discussing EBIT, even though it hasn't really taken any decisions yet on the specific details. And we think we're probably now at a stage when we should start thinking about how subtotals would work for financial companies, which is what we'll be discussing today. Before we move to our main session, I'll just briefly mention the other area that the board has been discussing since we last met, and that's looking at disaggregation. IFRS currently permits a company to provide, an entity to provide an analysis of expenses using a by nature or by function method. And this can either be presented on the face of the statement of financial performance or in the notes. Now, we found in practice that some companies are not, some companies are applying these requirements quite poorly, and we think this may be due to the lack of guidance in IFRS standards. So at the last board meeting, the board tentatively decided to provide more guidance by explicitly defining what we mean by function and by nature, and also developing criteria that an entity can use to determine which of those methods would be providing the most useful information. And the board also tentatively decided to require an entity to present the analysis of expenses on the face to give it prominence and take away the option to disclose it in the notes. So slide 16 just shows that we would, well, we expect to discuss the issues in the project during the rest of 2017 and into early 2018 and issue our first due process document in 2018. We still don't know whether that first due process document will be a discussion paper or an exposure draft, and the board will decide this after it's developed its discussions further. But we're likely to come back to CMAQ to seek your views as we further develop our EBIT or proposals or other proposals, and also we'll be performing board user outreach when we do issue that due process document. And the final slide on slide 17 just shows that the other topics that we plan to bring to the board throughout the rest of the year and early next year. So these are the remaining issues on the, from the scope slide that I mentioned earlier. So that concludes my presentation on my update. As I mentioned, it's just meant to be a quick update to lead into our main discussion. So we haven't listed any specific questions for you, but if you've got any comments to raise on the update or any questions, we can do that now.
Martin?
I have a question about the criterion using synergy for either including it in the investment line item. That seems rather arbitrary whether there is or is no synergy. Is the fact that there's no control not just sufficient and clear objective criterion than a criterion that's based on perceived synergy or lack thereof?
Well, we have, we did discuss this. This was the proposal presented at the last board meeting, and there were a number of concerns about the proposal. So we will be bringing a much more developed proposal back to the November meeting, where we are going to be addressing the concerns that board members had about synergy. So very, very much a working definition.
Paul? Just a comment, and I don't expect that you will feel able to respond, but I at least would strongly encourage the board to put this out as an exposure draft to get through the process more quickly than a discussion that would lead to, and you know, this is quite fully baked, so I'm not sure that the slowness that a discussion paper would imply would be required. Thank you. Peter?
I have a question about the example on page 11. On the income statement on page 11. And it relates to the restructuring expenses that are excluded. And I can live with that. What is problematic is that probably if you wouldn't have put them down there, most of it would have been included in cost of goods sold. And I need information about the number that are excluded from cost of goods sold, because gross margin is normally something that I follow in a company with gross margins very carefully. Will I get that information? Is it possible to instead structure the income statement with a column where I have the restructuring cost and I can see for each line item, cost of goods sold, selling and general administrative costs and so on. So instead of putting it in as a line, have it as a column on the side and then summarize the another income statement.
And that's something we will be bringing back. The board's decided to first focus on the bottom half of the income statement here and looking at the profit before finance and income tax. Subtotal. When we bring back the management performance measure, then we'll be looking at those kind of things and whether or not one of the approaches that we could consider is whether a column approach would be an appropriate way of changing things like that.
All right. I have one question. In your discussions on capital structure, it strikes me that the objective there is that you will define what consists of the capital structure components, right?
Well, we're developing principles over what goes in there, so not strictly saying that capital structure would consist of these things, but developing principles that we would hope to be applied relatively consistently.
Correct, because I think that's the right way to do it, because if you look at a lot of like big tech companies, if you look at the biggest asset on their balance sheet, it's going to be marketable securities. Mm. And you could argue that, well, that's not what you do, right? You you are a technology company, right? So I think a good outcome to get to the I, which is what you're after, right, is to sort of say, well, look, you define it, but at least if you've defined it, you have to be consistent. If you call that guy financing on the balance sheet, then put it also in I on the income statement and in all the metrics that have I. And I think that will, because if you are going to try to define it for companies, it's going to become very messy, and it will lead to all the stuff that we talked about previously. I think that companies will just say, well, you know what, my company is different. I have excess cash, and the other guy next door will say, I don't have excess cash. Do you understand that it's going to
Yes, I mean, we are going to be bringing our proposals back to the board in November, but I think where we'll be going is developing principles to help them to apply it relatively consistently, but not specifically state, specifically required of it.
Robert?
Just on the capital structure, I wanted to sort of expand on, I was going to talk about capital structure anyway, so it now becomes an expansion. I'll give you a just sort of a nasty little thing, and it's an illustration of lots of other nasty little things. In the mining industry, there's something called there's liabilities associated with cleanup. It's on the balance sheet. It's on the balance sheet as a liability. Fine. And oh, by the way, some of them have significant surety bonds associated with that. And so what you have to ask yourself is, that surety bond is actually off the balance sheet because the liability is there. So the fact that you've actually got a financial commitment, which you could have financed with cash or some other asset, means that the question is that surety bond a debt obligation or is it not? And by the way, it's not on the balance sheet. And I suspect if you start digging down, you're going to find a whole bunch of off-balance sheet things that feel like a debt obligation, therefore feel like interest, therefore should be in the interest calculations. And I think that sort of echoes Peter's comment about maybe you need to allow companies to define it and then let the analysts scream that maybe or maybe not the surety bond should be out. These things can be big. As a general rule, these off-balance sheet obligations that feel like a call that feel like financed resources can be material.
Thank you. So we'll do a couple more comments and then I guess we'll move on. Go ahead.
Just a question. Could you elaborate on the criteria you would use to choose between foundation by nature or by function?
We've decided to develop definitions and criteria, but we haven't discussed exactly what those type of criteria definitions would be yet. So that's what we're working in progress.
Rich?
I like the proposed definition of cap structure. Seems decent to me. One question I had, though, was on cash, just encourage you to think about cash as readily available kind of cash, overnight cash, because I think companies will show substantial cash balance, but it's in jurisdictions where actually retrieving that cash would trigger a substantial tax liability, so just sits there bills and bills and bills and bills. So that would be one thing. And then you said on the cash flow statement, there were some questions that you were going to discuss. Can you elaborate on what some of those issues are, or are we going to have another opportunity to talk about that down the road? Or?
Probably down the road, because our main focus is to look at the statement of financial performance first and see what we're proposing for that, and then the type of changes we'll be considering for the cash flow statement will be complementary changes, or mainly complementary changes depending on what we do to the income statement.
Presentation of OCI, is it still in the project?
Yes, we would be looking at that. I think what we would probably be proposing there would be relatively minor changes.
Comments?
Yes, just one quick comment on the associate income. From what I understood on page 13, you are still discussing if you should or not split associate income into part of it investment category and then part of it above EBIT. Is that correct?
Yeah, the board had briefly discussed where it will go, but we haven't taken any decisions. So we're actually going to be bringing a paper on that for the November board meeting.
I guess my comment is, you know, there's one distortion caused by classifying it above EBIT, which is most people would look at EBIT margins over time.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously associated income is not generating any revenue, so you end up distorting that kind of calculation. So I would tend to prefer to see it below, just because it makes it clearer and more consistent.
That's consistent with the
Yeah,
can you just respond to that directly? Because I don't think it's necessarily correct to have associates below the line. It comes back to the comment I made earlier on about the world is getting much more complex, and you no longer have this black and white, you know, I own 100% of that business and just run it without any outside help. And on the other hand, you know, just having sort of an investment where you attend a couple of board meetings and say, you know, guys, keep between the yellow lines. So I think, you know, there are actually a lot of companies that currently run businesses that are ultimately going to be subscale, and they need to make a decision if they're going to exit or if they prefer to be the junior partner in a joint venture. And if the stakes in the joint venture get recalibrated over time based on who makes what contribution, for example, in pharma, if you found a drug or not, then you could actually, your stake could fluctuate quite substantially. So I think, you know, to me that's still, you know, whether it's then, you know, an associate or, you know, a fully consolidated bit, it still is sort of, you know, the same business and the same outlook for the business. And so I find the distinction increasingly artificial.
Look out.
I usually agree with Marietta. This is one of the few topics that my heart starts beating faster. There's such beauty in a clean EBIT that is where you can relate EBIT to the revenues. And base EBIT on what indeed is under control and is consolidated. Many analysts in practice, they use EBIT or EBITDA margins to first you model your revenue expectations and then you model your margin expectations. That's how you build up your discounted cash flow model. If you now put in income from associates, it's a sort of a distortion. It's actually it's a bit comparing apples with pears, because, well, if you like apples more, the EBIT is before interest and taxes, and the income from associates is after interest and taxes. So they're not really in the same base. You could argue that if you have a company that has 200 million of EBIT and 100 million of and 100 million thereof is income from associates, it's actually of higher quality than it's only 200 million of EBIT, because then you still have to get rid of the interest and taxes. So if you want to do multiple analysis, and I have to admit that multiple analysis is vastly used as a means for valuing companies, we need clean EBITs, and we need EBITs that exclude elements that are have a maybe even higher value than EBIT, basically net income.
If I may, I agree with you actually on the clean EBIT. But you've got non-controlling interest as well, right? So different companies with different levels of non-controlling interest will also still be a little bit distorted, I suppose. So it is never going to be perfect, but I do agree with the technical point. If you've got an enumerator, something that doesn't relate to the denominator, you've got a problem with your ratio. I can do that. Marietta.
Just one very short comment. So long as people are obsessed with EBIT margins, the entire work of the ISV is just down the drain, because there's no meaningless kind of, you know, it really depends, because, you know, it then depends, you know, what sales you actually consolidate, and if somebody else is selling your product for you, and you just get a royalty. liability that you book in other operating income, you could have an absurdly high EBIT margin and it tells you nothing at all. And I think I get very annoyed with investors who focus and analysts who focus too much on margins. I don't think that should be the guiding factor for you.
Okay, last one on this topic.
just kidding.
Last one, because we need to move on to the next topic. All right, Peter, go ahead.
Very brief. If you like investors that do calculations of capital ratios, like return on capital employed, this number fits even worse. Then it should definitely be stripped out, because earnings in associated companies doesn't at all fit with the return on capital employed calculation. But I think the earnings in associated companies is always a very difficult number, because we don't have the same kind of information about the number as we have of rest of the income statement. We really don't have the kind of information about restructurings, currency effects, and so on. So it becomes a much more uncertain figure, even if you have included in EBIT non-minority interests. So I think it's a kind of a filthy number. Useful, it's an indicator, but you cannot really use it the same way as ordinary numbers in the income statement.
Okay, shall we? Thank you.